This is Ozarks at Large for Wednesday, April 16th, 2014. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
And I'm Christina Thomas. Walton Arts Center presents the Improvised Shakespeare Company, April 23rd, as part of the 10x10 art series. This company uses audience suggestions to improvise an entire play using the language and themes of Shakespeare's Elizabethan works. Tickets and information available at waltonartcenter.org or by calling 443-5600.
Community Clinic helps people lead healthy lives by providing health care for all in Northwest Arkansas. Serving the community for over 16 years with locations in Springdale, Rogers, Siloam Springs, Fayetteville, and Prairie Grove. Healthy people, healthy community. On the web at communityclinicnwa.org.
Ahead on this edition of Ozarks, I-540 prepares for a name change. And we tinker around the Amazium office in Bentonville. The Children's Museum is having its groundbreaking ceremony today.
Also, in the latest installment of our monthly Spaces series, we explore locker rooms, the press box, and more at Arvest Ballpark in Springdale.
Those stories are just ahead. But first, Arkansas lottery officials discussed declining sales, possible remedies, and scholarships yesterday with members of the Legislative Oversight Committee. Shane Broadway, director of the State Department of Higher Education, says some scholarship changes are affecting projections.
You can just now begin to see everybody understands these are the eligibility requirements. Okay, I understand now what I got to have. I'm a freshman entering. By the time I graduate, I got to have a 2.5 or a 19 if I take SmartCore. It's starting to sink in. So it's almost when you go and change that, that's your right to do as a legislature. But just know, in terms of our process of having to re-educate the public, it will take some time.
The new requirement for high school students to follow the SmartCore curriculum would have made 2,500 students last year ineligible for the lottery scholarship. The next fall semester will be the first class with the requirement. Broadway says nearly 4,000 of the 16,000 scholarship applications still need verification that the student took the SmartCore curriculum. He expects verification and the number of students not qualified to be known by June 1st. Meanwhile, Bishop Woosley, the state's lottery director, says the commission is $5.8 million below forecast. He says there are some possible causes.
I think it probably has a little bit to do with the age of the lottery, the fact that after a certain period of startup excitement, you often see a fall in sales. We had the theft last year, which, you know, that's something that might bring into question whether or not our players believe that our games are secure and things of that nature. And we've had some lawsuits filed against. I can't not believe that some of that didn't have an impact on our sales, along with just the age of the lottery and the fact that the excitement dies down.
Woosley argues numbers now might more accurately reflect Arkansas' sales capacity. He advocates for future changes like new games with interactive video monitors and allowing the use of debit cards to purchase.
A loose affiliation of citizens, advocacy groups, and unions gathered at the state capitol yesterday on tax day, condemning what they argue is a tax system favoring large corporations. Justin Nichols is with the American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. He criticized tax exemptions being granted to profitable corporations while cuts to social services are made.
Last year, corporate profits reached record levels, but the share of taxes paid by corporations is lower than it was in the 1960s, 70s, 80s, and 90s. If corporations paid the same share of taxes last year as they did 60 years ago when Eisenhower was president, they would have paid almost $700 billion more. So the exasperation that many of us feel at tax time is based on the truth. There are some who get special breaks, and the rest of us pay for it.
A couple dozen people turned out for the demonstration in what was the sixth Truthful Tuesday meeting. The weekly rallies, based on similar efforts across the nation, organize regular public displays that are largely focused on issues of corporate power in government and elections.
The forthcoming Ben Guerin Aquatic Center in Sebastian County continues to move forward. Ray Gossack, Fort Smith City Administrator, says soon the first project bids will be awarded.
We opened bids last week, and the construction manager is interviewing the low bidders now. And the construction manager will have over 30 different contracts to be awarded, but the first five of the contracts will be ready for award next Tuesday. And those are contracts where we can gain some additional time by awarding them early and starting that work early. So we'll begin awarding contracts next Tuesday, and then we'll finish the contract award process at the May 6th regular meeting.
He says the bids that have come in so far haven't brought with them any surprises.
They're a little below what we'd expected, and so we were in a very favorable bidding environment. And so we don't think we're going to face any budgetary pressure with this project based on the bids we received. And again, the construction manager is still interviewing the low bidders to make sure that they all understand their bids and can complete the work for the prices they bid.
The first bid packages to be awarded will mostly deal with the infrastructure side of the park, including portions of construction like dirt work, pool construction, concrete work, and plumbing and electrical services.
An undergraduate business plan competition team from the University of Arkansas has again brought home a favorable finish, this time from the Richards Barentine Values and Ventures Business Plan Competition in Fort Worth, Texas. Biobiotic Solutions won first place over more than two dozen teams in the competition. The grand prize netted the Biobiotic team $25,000. The team's business plan is centered around creating a container and robot that automates tissue handling. The concept is based on existing technology and would reduce pathology lab errors.
The Northwest Arkansas Naturals went 0-2 last night in a doubleheader against the Midland Rockhounds. The Nats were scoreless to Midland's one run in the first game, and the final score of game two was 6-1. The Naturals hit the road today to start a four-game series against the Tulsa Drillers.
The Razorback baseball team started off a nine-game stretch of home games last night with a 7-2 win over Stephen F. Austin. The win puts Arkansas at 23-15 on the season. Play continues Friday at Baum Stadium when the Razorbacks face 11th-ranked Vanderbilt.
Partly cloudy skies this evening with overnight lows from 37 in northwest Arkansas to 42 in the Arkansas River Valley. There's a 20% chance of afternoon showers tomorrow with highs from 63 to 67 degrees. Cloudy tomorrow evening with a 30% chance of showers and thunderstorms. Overnight lows from 38 to 46.
This is Ozarks at Large. There is a major name change underway in the region. The stretch of highway from Alma to Bella Vista, which has been designated as Interstate 540 since it opened in 1999, will soon be known only as Interstate 49. The designation change was announced this morning in Little Rock. Ozarks at Large's Kyle Kellums talked to Glenn Bollock, Special Projects Coordinator for the Arkansas State Highway and Transportation Department, this morning.
The work to create a seamless interstate highway from New Orleans to Kansas City has been on the drawing board for a long time. Slowly, piece by piece, the highway is becoming reality. In December 2012, a section of roadway in Missouri was designated as I-49, joining a more than 200-mile section in Louisiana in having that name, but leaving a large gap in the middle that is mostly western Arkansas. Today, the Arkansas State Highway Transportation Department announced the Federal Highway Administration has given the thumbs up to the name change along the 60-plus miles from Alma to Bella Vista. Glenn Bollock is a Special Projects Coordinator with the Arkansas State Highway and Transportation Department.
And this is something that, you know, you get into the economic development world and you have a double-digit interstate instead of a three-digit interstate means that you're connecting interstate to interstate. So the advantage of having an I-49 is pretty tremendous. And, of course, you know, people know for years that we've been developing the future I-49 through the western part of Arkansas. That whole section goes from basically New Orleans to Kansas City and through western Arkansas. But with the development of the Bella Vista Bypass, I-540s already there. There's work going on in Fort Smith. There's work south of Texarkana. But this is a pretty big deal for us. We just got word this week that the Federal Highway Administration has approved us to actually put I-49 signs up. So starting next week, the next couple of weeks, people will start seeing I-49 signs going up on what was I-540.
So that was my next question. Well, so I-49, and it's not like I-49/I-540?
That's correct. Because, you know, you get into the technical stuff of, you know, a three-digit interstate connects an interstate to a two-lane high or a four-lane highway. The designation of I-49, and this, you know, people in Louisiana have sections of I-49. There's portions in Missouri that you can go up there and you'll see I-49. So this just sort of reaffirms that Arkansas is part of the big picture. We're part of the I-49. You know, we still have a lot of work to do between, you know, the south end of the state and the north end up by Alma, but we're making progress. And, of course, that's the ultimate goal. I mean, the ultimate goal is to have I-49 going entirely through Arkansas.
Not to belabor this point, but so if someone tells me that they are going from, say, Fayetteville to Alma beginning next week and those signs go up, they will be traveling Interstate 49 and not I-540.
Yeah, that's true. There's a it's actually 65 miles, and we're going to have, oh gosh, it's almost 700 signs that we're going to be putting up. So, you know, it's exciting. It's exciting for us, but it's certainly exciting for people in Northwest Arkansas. And, you know, and again, I mean, we're not in the economic development business, but it's certainly a byproduct of what we do. And but economic development people will tell you that's a huge advantage to being part of a national highway system, an interstate system there with an I-49 that goes all the way through the state, you know, in addition to our other interstate system.
The announcement this morning was part of a regularly scheduled event to celebrate the launch of the Connecting Arkansas Program Project, or the CAP project, which was approved by the state's voters in 2012. Funded through a 10-year half-cent sales tax, the project includes 31 specific highway development ideas. The first will be more work on the long-discussed Bella Vista Bypass.
Well, you know, the people in Northwest Arkansas on the Bella Vista Bypass, you know, to be honest, they don't care if it's STIP money or CAP money or whatever money.
Or buried treasure.
But, you know, they're just wanting to get that done. And we certainly have known that there's been a problem with traffic in Bella Vista for some time. And, you know, again, I mean, the money just really wasn't there. But because the people voted for this, we're not only doing jobs in Bella Vista, but we're doing jobs down toward El Dorado. You know, we're doing jobs over in Northeast Arkansas. So it's all over the state. But, yeah, certainly, you know, 31 projects, and that was the beauty of this program. I mean, Dick Trammell, one of our commissioners, said, you know, let's go to the people and tell them, here's what we're going to do. If you vote for this sales tax and you vote for this program, here's what we are going to do. So we had a list of 31 jobs that we said we would do, and you know, man, in this day and age, it's unbelievable. We get calls up from all over the country saying, how in the world did y'all get the people of Arkansas to vote for a sales tax? I mean, this is general revenue sales tax. It's a half-cent sales tax for 10 years, so it does have a cap on it, but it's going to allow us to do so much. But, yeah, we're so excited, Kyle, to do this Bella Vista project. You know, we already have two projects underway. One of them's wrapping up. You know, even though people, it's out on new locations, so people don't always get to see it out there. But, you know, if you head out towards Centerton, you can see the construction going on where it crosses Highway 72. But, you know, this is big. This first CAP project, it's a almost $53 million project for us to do another section of that bypass. So it's great. People ought to see in the next couple of weeks, see some activity out there.
Glenn Bollock is a special projects coordinator with the Arkansas State Highway and Transportation Department. He talked to me this morning about the official designation of Interstate 49 from Alma to Fayetteville, a stretch that has been known as Interstate 540. The new signs along the highway will begin to be put in place next week. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Kyle Kellums.
Hi, my name is Paul, your host for the Generic Blues Show, where local and international artists get showcased for over 22 years. You know, anymore, the blues casts a wide net. As new generations emerge, the look and the sound of the blues continues to evolve. Tune in every Friday night at 9 o'clock to see what I've captured next on listener-supported KUAF. We'll see you then.
Yesterday, the University of Arkansas announced a partnership with a charter school network in the Delta.
Wherever you go, even though we know we're going to get a good number of you here, I'm real excited about that. But wherever you go, we want you to be successful. And that's the beauty of this partnership. We care about you, whether you come here or you go to other schools. We want you to be successful. It's not good enough just to get into college. We want you to get through. I bet you've heard that before, haven't you? Yeah, I know you talk a lot about that at KIPP. We want you to get through. We want you to graduate, go on, do great and wonderful things.
That story's just ahead in about 12 and a half minutes here on Ozarks at Large.
This morning, ground was broken at the site of the Future Amazium in Bentonville, an amazing museum that will engage the imaginations of children and their families. The explosive event was a groundbreaking with no shovels allowed. It wasn't about the turning of dirt, but rather the fulfillment of an idea. Earlier this week, I was able to release my inner child by visiting the current Amazium project location, where there is a tinkering studio. Executive Director Sam Dean took me on a tour of the studio. We made some discoveries along the way. Prior to coming to the Amazium, Dean spent 5 years working for the Exploratorium in San Francisco. That museum was founded on the concept that the world is a knowable place, and creating a museum not of artifacts that you look at, but a place of ideas, and engaging its visitors to learn about themselves and the world around them. He brought this concept and a tinkering studio with him to the Amazium project. There are now 7 tinkering studios in the state of Arkansas. When the Amazium moved their offices to this location off the Bentonville Square last June, Dean says they decided to use a different tact.
Instead of having a place that had offices for our preview center that's just full of offices, we decided to cram ourselves, double up and triple up in our small little offices and create, set up a space for Tinkering Studio, a place where as people wander in and want to learn more about the Amazium, the best way to learn about the Amazium is to learn by seeing something that you'd be doing there. And we thought the Tinkering Studio was the best example.
As a place to try ideas and play around with them to make sure they fit in this community and to see what families here get excited about. You can do anything in here. There are materials, there's space, tools, and facilitation to be able to make any idea come alive.
It's really built around, though, a really tight philosophic approach that we want to, you know, over time people have lost the, have migrated away from working with our hands, from making stuff, from taking stuff apart, understanding how things tick. And so the studio, you can do anything here. It's a place where ideas can wander, but it's really based around material fluency and using our own hands to express our ideas in the world.
As we chat, Dean and I sit at a butcher block top table in the center of the work studio. On a far wall is a large flat-screen TV, which loops a video taken in the Tinkering Studio in San Fran. Below and to its left is the Cabinet of Curiosity, a wooden cabinet with glass windows. It's modeled on classic collections of the Victorian 1700s and 1800s, when amateur scientists would find stuff like shells, tortoise shells, tree samples, and bones from other parts of the world, bringing them back home as living repository of natural curiosities.
Well, here at the in the Tinkering Studio, it's a place for us to have a repository of ideas of projects past. So as I open it up, we're able to go inside here, and although there are some toys that are in here, some good wind-up jittering toys, these are all things that have either been built in the studio or meant to inspire projects that happen here.
From the collection of objects in various shapes and sizes, some handmade, some made by machine, he pulls out a toy from Keekerland. It uses a motor similar to what can be pulled from a cell phone or PlayStation, and the weight is a little off-center.
It dances, it jitters, it moves about. So the idea is, how can you take this idea and make something of your own?
Dean brings out his toy he built with inspiration from this one in the cabinet. Looking little like the original toy, that's okay and encouraged. Dean's resembles an R2-D2 with a tin can-like body, long wire arms holding markers that draw the toy's path as it wobbles and dances across the surface. Some added nails and marbles loudens its movements. Though different, it's obvious Dean took the original idea and went with it. In other projects, tinkerers are asked to use elements found in nature for their creations, such as light. Dean pulls a tube from the cabinet that resembles a short, squat kaleidoscope. It's been made from Mylar film, wax paper, and a concrete tube. He carries it across the room to a row of LED-colored lights and holds it up.
And then you can get some interesting color mixing happening in there. So you sometimes get some, right, once you get the purple, there's no purple light, there's a blue. Sometimes you get yellow in there. Anyway, So it's a good chance for kids and adults to make an art piece that plays around with something that we mess around with every day, light. One of the most, I think, one of the more entrancing features.
He says kids have really taken this idea and gone with it, creating their pieces in a variety of shapes and sizes, which is the ultimate goal. Tinkering is not a formula. It's a phenomenon, requiring tinkerers of all ages to learn from themselves and from each other. Parents are encouraged to participate in programs with their kids.
What we love about that is that we had parents who were sitting down making their own. We had kids making their own. And then you had these wonderful moments where parents were struggling with the materials and their kids leaned over and helped and vice versa. And it was just really neat. In lots of ways, the light box we were making was an outcome of the workshop, but also was this wonderful moment where kids were seeing their parents try out new ideas. And that's cool to see your parent like really get excited about learning and messing around with something.
Wind is another element allowed for play with the help of a wind tunnel. It's made from items picked up at any home improvement store. It's a plastic tube held together with wood and sits atop a fan aimed upward and up into the tube. He turns the machine on and grabs me some props to play with. I toss a green plastic strawberry basket into the column of air from below, just to see what happens when the hamper meets the air.
There we go. Ah, clear out. Look at that. I like bouncing.
We also try toilet paper rolls and Dixie cups, which we tear to form a fan-like thing and tape it to another Dixie cup. Guessing and testing to see what happens as shape and weight is changed. Dean and I talk potential changes and what we expect them to result in. He says these are the types of questions that are fun to talk about with kids because each child has a different goal. Some want an object to hover inside the tunnel. Others want theirs to be thrown out of the top or to spin around.
It's really fun to watch kids and their adults they're with just play around with materials, make tiny cuts and tears and test and retest. And really that's a hallmark of an engineer, right? You're making small little changes to end up with whatever goal you want. It's not the goal for us. We just put an interesting phenomenon there and we want kids and their families to play with it.
He says families can play for 20, 30, or 40 minutes just with the wind tunnel, evolving 8 or 9 iterations of an object. Bins of tools such as clothespins, masking tape, crepe paper, cardboard and plastics in various shapes and sizes, screws and wire. These bins line the walls of the tinkering studio. It's equipped to make objects from the very simple, such as a paper hat, to those wind-up toys, using the familiar to create items either unfamiliar or not familiar in that medium. Next to one said bin is the marble wall, using more familiar items such as crown molding, bells, plywood, plexiglass, nails. These items are stuck into pegboard to create a Plinko-like walkway for marbles. Dean says they love that it requires a lot of finesse, with things often not turning out as planned. Users must guess, test, and tinker with their marbles path. The Tinkering Studio is just one of many exhibits that will be at the Amazium, which will be completed sometime next year. On that center butcher block table is a model of the Amazium, which will rest near Crystal Bridges Museum of American Art. With the assistance of a pointer, a plastic hand with its index finger extended, Dean shows me around the future museum. A butterfly-shaped roof helping the building to fit into the surrounding nature and architecture. When completed, there will be 20,000 square feet of exhibit space.
Which has everything from a nice little local grocery store. You know, kids spend most of their time, we laugh, where do kids spend most of their time? They spend it at home, they spend it at school, and they spend it at a grocery store, probably the third most frequently visited place for kiddos growing up. Except this puts little kiddos in the front seat.
A real semi-truck will be nearby, donated by Walmart, and providing visitors the ability to climb inside the cab of a big rig. Innovation Alley is the backbone between three classrooms, which include the Hershey Lab, an art studio, and this tinkering studio, which will look much as it does here, but perhaps larger. Dean says this area is where kids will spend much of their time, learning and exploring the world in a deep and profound way. Much like its neighbor, Crystal Bridges, the Amazium has an outdoor space for exhibits and exploring, with a full acre for messing around in nature and complete with space for the community. A science experiment in itself, the groundbreaking for the Amazium was held this morning. A completion is expected next fall. For information on this amazing museum, or events or summer camps, visit their website, amazium.org. This is Ozarks at Large.
It is Wednesday, April 16th, 2014, and this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Christina Thomas.
And joining us now is Becca Martin Brown, features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
I'm sorry, this one's predictable.
Okay.
It's Wacky Wednesday.
Did I give you that idea?
I think so.
You guessed that last week. Yeah.
I think so. Talking about pigs.
Okay. At a museum?
At a museum.
The Shiloh
Rogers,
no. Rogers Historical Rogers Museum. Historical. According to all of my research, did you know that pig skins are not made of pigs?
No.
They're made of cows.
Oh.
That makes no sense.
It doesn't.
It does not.
And so will many other things. Now, they have this really interesting exhibit that looks at pigs both as a staple of Arkansas farm life, because everybody had one. It was what you slaughtered in the fall to have winter meat, and then pigs as razorbacks.
Mm-hmm.
So they have interesting things like a promotional potholder with a picture of a razorback.
Huh.
Who knew? Mm-hmm. And a thing that you stuff sausage casings with.
Okay.
It's a pretty wacky combination, and it should be a fun exhibit. And you have until August 9th to see it.
So plenty of time.
All
plenty
summer.
So chase your pigs to Rogers. I don't know. I'm feeling wacky today.
Thanks, Becca. Becca Martin Brown is features editor with Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
Hello, my name's Pete Hartman. I'm operations manager of KUAF Public Radio, and I'd like to let you know that everyone here at KUAF would like to thank the hundreds of listeners who either called or went online and contributed during our spring on-air fundraiser. The commitment of our community to this public radio station has always been strong, and now it will remain strong because of listeners like you. Thanks so much for supporting KUAF Public Radio.
About a dozen students from the KIP, or Knowledge is Power program, Delta Charter Schools in Helena and Blytheville visited the University of Arkansas campus yesterday. As Ozarks at Large's Timothy Dennis explains, their visit was part of a larger partnership between the university and the charter school network.
Whitney Watson is a senior at the KIP Delta Charter School in Helena. She went to traditional public school until she reached eighth grade, when she enrolled in the open enrollment public charter school, which is specifically designed to prepare students for college. She said that the differences in the public school she attended and the KIP charter school are pretty clear-cut.
They make us aim higher. They push us. It's a push. It's like a, you have to do this. It's like homework, college. It's a push. It's kind of forced upon you, but it's an agreed thing. But more so at the public schools, of course they want you to go to college. Every school wants you to go to college, but it's not so much as that push and the support that I feel that I have at KIP as I would have at like a public school.
The students, or KIPsters as they were called, were brought to campus to entice them to enroll at the U of A. But that's entirely the point of a partnership between the two entities. Amy Charpentier is the KIP through College Director for KIP Delta Public Schools.
The partnership is really about making sure that kids coming out of the Arkansas Delta have the ability to go to colleges where they're academically prepared for them, and to make sure they have the funding and support to get through graduation.
The new partnership announced Tuesday will help achieve that goal of getting students through college, as the agreement formalizes a pathway for students to graduate from the charter school and to attend the state's flagship university. Chancellor Dave Gerhart explained to the KIPsters what the partnership means for them.
What we want to do is reach out to the KIP School Delta and tell you that this is a great place to come start your education, finish your education, get a degree, and then access the American Opportunity System. We want you to think of the University of Arkansas as the place you want to be in the future. So we welcome you with open arms. We hope this new agreement will help you to come to the University of Arkansas, the flagship of the state. And we want you to know that when you come here, we'll do everything we can to make you successful and to help you become a success in life and to get a college degree.
As part of the formal agreement between the two educational entities, the U of A stands to recruit and enroll about a half dozen KIPP alumni, starting with the coming academic year, and up to six eligible students will be provided with full financial support through a grant from the Walton Family Foundation. In return, the KIPP schools will be made available as a learning resource for U of A education students. Leslie Yingling is the Director of College Access Initiatives and Diversity Affairs Outreach at the U of A. She says that this isn't the first time that KIPP Delta schools and the U of A have worked together.
They were the founding partners in our U of A Delta Schools College Completion Consortium about 4 years ago. They have worked with College Access Initiative, which is my program, for all the years since then, participating in our outreach and summer programming. This partnership that's just being announced is just beginning, and what it really is doing is building on existing work that we've been doing and formalizing some of the resources that we're able to offer their students.
But regardless of where the KIPPsters end up attending college, the outreach efforts by the U of A are about increasing college attainment for students from underserved areas. 88% of students served by KIPP Delta schools in Helena and Blytheville are from low-income families. And according to the 2010 census, only 10% of Americans aged 25 to 29 and from the lowest economic quartile have completed a degree program at a four-year college. Charles Robinson, the U of A's Vice Chancellor for Diversity and Community Relations, told the KIPPsters that college success is key to the partnership between the educational entities.
Wherever you go, even though we know we're going to get a good number of you here, I'm real excited about that. But wherever you go, we want you to be successful. And that's the beauty of this partnership. We care about you, whether you come here or you go to other schools. We want you to be successful. It's not good enough just to get into college. We want you to get through. I bet you've heard that before, haven't you? Yeah, I know you talk a lot about that at KIPP. We want you to get through. We want you to graduate and go on and do great and wonderful things. And so we're very, very proud of what you've achieved thus far and want you to continue to work hard.
And the educational partnership isn't just about getting KIPPsters through college. Amy Charpentier of KIPP Delta says that next month, much of the first class of KIPPsters to go to college in 2010 will graduate with their bachelor's degrees. She says she's eager to see what those students, as well as the ones who will soon enter college, will do once they graduate.
We know lots of our students plan to come back to be in our own community as social workers or teachers, or to work with other organizations to make their community better, which we're really excited about because it isn't what we dreamed of, but it's what we have always hoped for. And so we're excited that they'll be able to give back and show students from our own community what it means to have a college education and what it can do to providing for your family and making the community more better generally.
The U of A is the latest college to partner with KIPP schools across the country. Other universities with similar partnerships in place include Duke, Georgetown, and UC Berkeley. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Timothy Dennis.
Support for KUAF comes from Today's Bank, formerly First State Bank of Northwest Arkansas. Today's Bank welcomes new deposit accounts and is collecting food throughout April for Hunger Awareness Month. Located on North College and the new branch in Fiesta Square in Fayetteville, plus two locations in Huntsville. Today's Bank, member FDIC.
The Mental Health Association and the League of Women Voters presents Mental Illness in the Judicial System. It's this evening from 6 to 7:30 in the community room of the Fayetteville Public Library. Tonight's discussion includes the human and fiscal costs of inappropriate incarceration of the mentally ill, solutions, and how the Arkansas legislature can help. 571-8127 for more information.
The KUAF website giveaway is offering passes to the Fayetteville Roots Festival August 28th through the 31st. One winner will receive two sold-out VIP passes, which include the Friends of the Festival backstage concert, late-night concerts, plus the main stage. Performers include Daryl Scott and Tim O'Brien, Threepenny Acre, and more. Registration available at KUAF.com.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Christina Thomas.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
Last Saturday, the Northwest Arkansas Center for Equality and Pride, People Respecting Individual Differences and Equality at the University of Arkansas, held a statewide LGBT summit on the U of A campus, the first of its kind. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich reports.
The day-long Arkansas LGBT Summit 2014, which drew as many as 100 activists and participants from around the state, featured a dozen workshops on civil and marriage rights, violence against gays, religion, gay youth, transgenderism, even financial and legal planning.
And that has to be a state that recognizes same-sex marriages, so you go there.
This is the second summit organized by Pride, based at the University of Arkansas. The first was more of a local event staged in 2006. Flannery Wasson serves as Pride president.
Well, Pride was established in 1983, and prior to Pride being an official RSO, which is a registered student organization, it was kind of fostered by, we like to call, the mothers of the Razor Dykes. And so prior to being official, we had a kind of an underground, very active student body. But then in 1983, we actually were able to get funding and officially recognized, and that meant that some of our meetings were, you know, safer than others. In our history, there have been, you know, some threats, and some of our meetings had been firecrackered and everything. So I'm very thankful to now be the president, and we have faced, you know, really no scrutiny or anything. We're a very respected RSO. We do actually a lot. We've won a few awards in the prior years for our events on campus, which are mostly educational or also social. So we've been really thankful to have come from such an underground history, but now it's very open and everyone's welcome to join, and we've had a lot of great support from the students.
Lawson, who is straight, is a senior political science major. She got involved in gay civil rights after starting a gay straight alliance while attending high school in Fort Smith.
I feel like my orientation sometimes helps me, and other times I keep real quiet because it doesn't really matter. You know, rights are rights, so.
Participant Dina Windor from Rogers says it's important for straight Arkansans to learn about others who are different.
Because it's a very important tool for people in general to have more love for each other. I'm transgender. I'm male to female.
David Walton, who volunteers for the Northwest Arkansas Center for Equality, says he came to the summit to learn more about different orientations.
I'm gay. I'm accepting of gay and lesbians, but it's more difficult for me to deal with others like trans and stuff until I understand them. So understanding these people will help me work with them better and understand.
According to census records, 3.5% of the adult population identify as LGBT, and more than 700,000 identify as transgendered, but those numbers likely skew low and are expected to rise in coming years as LGBT civil rights, such as gay marriage, are increasingly enacted at the state and federal level. Jamie Renee, a male-to-female transgender activist from Fayetteville, presented a workshop titled Transgender 101. She says this was the largest turnout of transgendered participants she's ever seen.
Yes, we have a very good representation here. I'm very happy because 5 years ago that was not the case.
And why was that?
I think it's becoming more and more acceptable. And we're becoming more and more comfortable with ourselves. I've been doing this for 14 years.
The presence of more transgendered participants could likely be traced to the summit's keynote speaker, Tommy Luckett. She's a 36-year-old African-American trans woman from Helena who now lives in Little Rock working for the Health for Life Clinic, which serves the transgender community. At the summit, she spoke about conflicts within her community.
There's all types of discrimination, and there's even bickering within the transgender community. I just really want us all to come together. I mean, how can we ask for equality if we can't even get along?
For example, Luckett points to passing.
Who's passable and who's not? Who looks more like a woman versus who doesn't? And there are all these cliques, which I really want to do away with. That's why I haven't been a part of any support groups, because the word support is like tossed out of the window. And so basically it's all about who looks more like a woman. And that's not anything I want to be a part of.
Then there's sexual preference within the transgender community.
Well, in lay terms, you have transgender who identify as straight, and they seek out straight men. You have transgender who identify as lesbian. They want they want to live their lives as a woman, and some even go through the entire gender reassignment surgery only to end up being with a woman, you know. But to me, each his own. I have no right to judge anybody. I've gone through a lot of that myself, and I wouldn't want to inflict that pain on anybody else.
Tommy Luckett says transgendered individuals continue to get the brunt of bias in the U.S., so it's important to come out, to take a stand.
No longer will I lurk. I'm here. I'm human. And that, first and foremost, I am a human being. I pay my taxes, and I'm law-abiding citizen, so I want to just be out in society as well. And I think that that's the message that we're trying to get across today.
The summit was sponsored by the Northwest Arkansas Center for Equality, a grassroots advocacy group working to achieve full equality based in Fayetteville. President James Rector.
When we first started this, we thought it was going to be this very, you know, very small event. We didn't know the numbers were going to be what they were. So I was ecstatic to see, you know, when we had this huge amount of registration and people just contacting us. But the ultimate dream and goal for what we want to do is to have a continuous annual summit that would be statewide.
The last attempt to organize a statewide coalition occurred in 2001 under the Arkansas Equality Network. Previous to that, a half dozen local and state groups formed, only to dissolve. James Rector also serves as field coordinator for the Human Rights Campaign, based in Washington, D.C., spearheading an Employment Non-Discrimination Act campaign in Arkansas.
We were urging U.S. Senator Pryor to vote in favor of it, which we successfully did. The interesting thing from that is we kind of got this snapshot of a lot of people that aren't aware of what protections we have or don't have, and that's both LGBT and ally community. Most people don't know that we're the second state in the South that has, you know, strong anti-bullying laws that cover sexual identity and orientation. Most, if you ask the average Arkansan, they don't know that. So, there's that moving in that good direction, but there's still a lot of work we can do with adoption, immigration, non-discrimination in workplace and housing. I think key people are paying attention and finally listening to what the LGBT movement needs to be in this state.
James Rector has been traveling this state, delivering the results of a survey conducted by the Human Rights Campaign Fund on lesbian, gay, bisexual, and transgendered Americans, including in Arkansas. Rector says nearly 1,000 Arkansans responded to HRC's survey.
And the demographic kind of, you know, breaks down. It was definitely more heavy on gay white men and women. So they're actually going back now and doing more focus group studies with transgender and African American or people of color, Hispanic, Latino, that community. They're doing a little bit more actual focus groups so we can find out more information.
The final survey results will be used by groups such as the Northwest Arkansas Center for Equality to reach out to culturally diverse LGBT Arkansans, an organizational priority, James Rector says. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
Five degrees and clear skies here at Arvest Ballpark with a slight breeze blowing out of the west. Takes the flags as it just plays with the flags out in center field. Adam works out of the stretch. Here's the next.
Yesterday, the Northwest Arkansas Naturals wrapped up a three-game homestand against the Midland Rockhounds. The Nats began the 2014 season with 6 games in Texas. When the team is on the road, Arvest Ballpark is a lot quieter. Once a month, we take listeners behind the scenes of a unique space. Earlier this month, I found myself exploring some interesting places inside Arvest Ballpark in Springdale. The stadium was built by Kansas City-based architects HOK Sport, now called Populous, and it won 2008 Ballpark of the Year on baseballparks.com. According to the team's website, the project, which included construction of the ballpark and parking lots and surrounding road improvements, cost $50 million. It seats 6,500 plus the berm and picnic areas. Marketing and PR manager Dustin Detlefs says their largest crowds have been upwards of 8,900 people. Anyone who has attended a game since the park opened in 2008 is no doubt familiar with the concourse level of the stadium. Concession stands and restrooms line the outer perimeter of the park, while rows and rows of seats descend toward the field. A tan building located to the north of the main gate houses a souvenir shop, a ticket office, and the Naturals front office. Entering this building from the north, you'll find yourself in a standard waiting area with a receptionist desk, a few couches, and a flat-screen TV mounted on the wall. Continuing south, there's a long hallway with offices on either side. Dustin Detlefs, the Naturals marketing and PR manager, is serving as today's tour guide. The guest services and first aid area is located about halfway down the hall. An exit on the far side of the room leads to the concourse level. Detlefs makes his way toward a door located just south of the main entrance. The Sam's Club community room is located just ahead in this lobby area. To the right, there's a staircase leading up to the suite area and another one leading under the stadium.
And this kind of goes down to the player level. This hallway goes underneath the concourse along the third baseline. It's actually where the visiting team goes down to their dugout area. So they don't have to cross the field or anything. They can just head that way.
Athletes often leave several of their belongings behind when they travel out of town, so access to the home clubhouse is limited. Because of this, today's tour will focus on the visitors' clubhouse. Heading south down the hall, there's a room on the left filled with whirling machines cleaning laundry. The visiting team's clubhouse is located on the right and consists of a kitchen area, a shower and bathroom area, and a standard square locker room whose walls are lined with green lockers. Detlefs says the home clubhouse is much larger and shaped like an oval. He says it has more amenities like bigger flat-screen TVs, couches, a family lounge, and a workout area. After exiting the visitor's locker room to the east, Detlefs travels down another walkway, and an indoor batting area is located immediately to the right.
Honestly, for this level, it's a pretty nice amenity for the teams because they can just go right off their locker rooms and get swings in, or if it's bad weather, like rainy weather like today, they can do their work inside and not have to worry about going outdoors or going to a separate building.
To the left of this walkway, there are a couple of locker rooms, one for umpires and another one for mascots. The latter is a very small room where Strike the Sasquatch and Sinker the Blue Beaver Lake Creature can get ready. A shelving unit contains random items like a t-shirt cannon, baseball piñatas, and cowbells. Items used in current on-field promotions in between innings can be found down the hall to the right in an auxiliary locker room. Fans may be familiar with the tricycles used in a paperboy race or a pair of brown recliners that are typically situated behind home plate. Promotional staff members have easy access from this locker room to the field thanks to a nearby tunnel.
This is the tunnel that our staff can use. It's also, if anybody has handicap needs that wants to sit down front, they can also use this area. But as we go through, I think it's raining. But it leads right up to right near the dugouts. And as you see, the team has their own tunnel. It's basically the same thing. And their rubber mat goes all the way up, and that's down there because of their metal cleats, so they don't have to step on the cement or anything like that. Then it just leads right into the field of play, a gate that our staff can use to take first pitches and contestants out there. And then the dugout for the home team. This is our home dugout.
From here, Detlefs heads up a row of stairs past fan seating toward the concourse and back to the suite entrance area. This time, he heads upstairs to the suite level. According to the team's website, these private, climate-controlled suites are 480 square feet and are comprised of a private restroom, a kitchen area, and a deck with seating for 13. Detlefs says they have 23 suites, two of which are a little larger and measure about 960 square feet. An area for reporters is located in the center of the suite level.
This is our press box. So this is where the media will sit during the game, as well as some of our staff. We do provide food for the media, typically about a half hour before the game starts, 45 minutes. And it's kind of stadium-style seating up here. So we have usually one of our representatives. Typically, I'll be up in the press box just to answer any questions. And then we have enough seats up here. And in each one of these windows individually can open up. So if it's a nice night, you can open it up.
To the right of the large window, there's a row of doors to much smaller rooms. The first two are the booths for the visiting and home radio announcers. Next to these is one more room that gets busy on game day.
And then this is a room where we pretty much, this is where the official scorer sits. He'll sit at the front left, and then we have our game day stringer. So if you've ever followed along on a website, you know, ball one, strike one, hit, run, score, that's kind of what he does. And then we have our line score person back here that just basically controls balls and strikes, runs, hits, errors on the video board.
Three of the room's walls contain windows, which allow workers to see the field as well as other staff members in the rooms beside them. A computer and a pair of binoculars are located on a tabletop stationed at the front of the room. This room also contains a radar gun that's mounted and pointed at home plate to record pitching speeds. The video board room is next door, and it's about three times as big as the last three rooms. This area contains chairs and tables at the front of the room, and there's a tall bay of televisions and electrical devices located in the back. General Manager Justin Cole describes the production room as the ballpark's nerve center.
We have a full-time production person who's here year-round. He does all of our content for, you know, graphics on the website, brochures, commercials, as well as the in-game stuff. He does have an assistant that works with us during the season. But on a game day, you have Patrick is our production coordinator. He is the kind of the head of that room. He usually runs the soundboard, so all the music or video sound. We have our PA announcer, a person that runs the computer that controls the video board, a stats person doing the stats, and then in the back of the room, there's the technical director who's with all the camera people, and then a person doing replays. So all in all, you have six people, some nights seven, just depending on how much we have going on.
Cole says the production area is one of his favorite spaces in the ballpark.
When you come to a baseball park, you obviously have the game on the field, and that's the focal point. But that room controls all of the video, audio. They're communicating with the in-between innings crew that's doing all the fun stuff. And when you're up there, you can't impact the game, but you can impact the crowd. You know, you can play a sound effect that'll make everyone laugh, or you can play a song that'll, you know, if we hit a home run and you play the right song, it just takes the energy level up even more. So I really like being in there. Not all game, but I like being in there for at times. Because you kind of get the pulse of what we're doing.
The Northwest Arkansas Naturals season is underway, and you can explore Arvest Ballpark now through early September. KUAF Night with the Naturals is scheduled for next Thursday, and a portion of ticket sales will benefit KUAF. Tickets can be ordered by calling 927-4063 or by emailing treyg@nwanaturals.com.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Fort Smith, Bentonville, and Lincoln. Did want to mention, a couple of months ago, I believe in February, for our sports segment, I visited the Butterfield Trail Elementary Archery Team as they prepared to go to state championship games.
And did well, I think.
They did. They came in second at the state championship.
Awesome.
So they're going to nationals next
month. Good for
them. It's May 5th through the 10th in Louisville, Kentucky.
Okay.
And to get ready for that, to raise some money, they're having an event this evening at 5:30 at the 324 Ballroom. That's behind Jose's off of Dixon Street. Mm-hmm. They're having a taco bar. So for $10, you can go eat tacos with iced tea or water, and all proceeds benefit the Butterfield Elementary Archery Team.
Well, very cool. Mm-hmm. So you can go out to that, and good luck to the team. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Antoinette Grajeda.
I'm Christina Thomas.
Going to end today's show with some music by The Head and the Heart. The song is called Shake. And this is in honor of the University of Arkansas Headliner Concerts Committee, who announced via Twitter yesterday that this band will perform on campus May 1st. Students can reserve tickets beginning at 10 a.m. Saturday until Monday at osa.uark.edu. They get first crack at the tickets, and if there's anything left, that gets opened up to the general public. Thanks again for listening, and have a great Wednesday.